There will be no personal nor direct attacks on anyone. And I would ask that you please try to keep down the loud cheering and the clapping. There will be no booing and no unruly behavior. With that...
This is painful, and it will be for a long time.
Donald Trump, baby! That's right, this man knows what's up!
After all, these are a couple of high-stepping turkeys, and you know what to say about a high-stepper. No step too high for a high-stepper.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
Well, Sean's a tough guy. I mean, I think everybody knows that. You know, Sean, he took some licks. He hangs in there.
Yeah, what's wrong with the deal we got? I mean, the deal we got drank pretty good, don't it?
Did you hear what I said?
So this is a brave council. I had no doubt about them.
That doesn't suck.
If you don't like it, too bad.
Last question. Were you high on drugs?
Last question. Kiss my...
Here we go, FM Talk 106.5, Midday Mobile. Glad to have y'all along on this Monday, and glad to have you this hour. Phone number, as it was last hour, as is all the hours, 343-0106, 343-0106 for a phone call or a text to the Ascension Technologies text line, so you reach out to us right there. All right, and we'll get to some of these texts that came in. I would just add this one. Hal says, drones are sitting ducks for directed energy weapons. Okay. Well, you know what? I've got somebody in here. He's District 105 representative, last on the charts, first in your hearts, Chip Brown. In another life, has spent time around weaponry here in the U.S. military. Directed energy weapon. Is that a laser?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
They're all talking. Just say lasers for me, people, so we could laser down the drones. But, you know, you and I talked during the news break. I mean, your time in Afghanistan dealt with asymmetric warfare, that we have the might of the U.S. military, and we're fighting stuff that's homemade.
Well, yes, and you know, you got to have the will to win, and mm-hmm. you know, it's not a knock on the servicemen and women; it's a knock on leadership, and it's a knock on mindset. I mean, those, you know, in that part of the world, Southwest Asia, Asia proper, they think in terms of. There's a reason that China has a 100-year plan. Mm-hmm. I mean, we think in terms of what's going to happen tomorrow, what's going to happen
next election, next,
exactly. Yeah. They don't think like that, and they think of the enemy of my great-grandfather as my enemy, and that's – it's just a total different mindset, and that's how that, – that will is how guys can come out of caves and mm-hmm. and wear you down through attrition. And
yeah, and that's, you know, that's the physical attrition there, you know, that happened to our service members in Afghanistan. But then there's – I don't want to seem dense on this, but there's also – a financial attrition. I don't want to seem cold to that because, I mean, number one, obviously our biggest concern are the human beings, the Americans. But financially, I mean, Houthi rebels for a few billion dollars, Iran can buy a whole bunch of $25,000 drones and give them to the Houthi rebels, and then we got to shoot a million-dollar missile to shoot down a $25,000 drone.
That's right. That's right. And you know, the they're the masters of getting a lot out of a little. Mm-hmm. And when our government is giving them billions of dollars, giving the Iranian government billions of dollars, which is, to me, it's a traitorous act. I mean, there was a time when people would go to prison for that. Mm-hmm. And instead, we're unloading plane loads of cash like Obama did, and Biden's doing everything he can to give money to Iran. I mean, where does that money go? They can say it's sitting in a bank account in the United Arab Emirates or in right. Qatar, but in reality is we all know it's going to buy a whole ton of $25,000 drones
right.
to attack us, and going into Israel to support Hamas. And
you mean Qatar? You mean that money goes to Qatar in that account? Qatar, the same country, and I know there are allies where Hamas was tracked up at the Four Seasons?
That same place.
Okay, just checking.
Same place.
Just wanted to...
I was actually deployed there in 2007, and you know, it was common knowledge then that they paid Iran and they paid what was the forerunner of ISIS and, you know, all the bad guys. They funded them to essentially not attack them.
Yeah, paid a protection fee, like
that's right.
like the Gambino crime family.
It's a racket, and they at that time too were known to be sympathetic to the guys that we were fighting. We have bases there. We
right,
you know,
is this weird ally? I mean, what do you, I mean, if somebody who served like that, is that a a frenemy. You know what I'm saying? These allies we have in the region, I understand in realpolitik why we have to have them, but it doesn't mean I have to like it.
No, it's a shady business. Those types of people you can never fully trust, because they're going to do what's in their best interest. And if the best interest is today to support the United States, okay. But they know that eventually, one day, the United States is going to be in trouble in that region. It's the same thing. I can remember talking to people in Afghanistan that would tell you, you're going to leave just like you did in Vietnam, and you're going to leave us here, and we're going to have to pick up the pieces. And you can never fully support a country. If I'm in Afghanistan, why am I going to 100% buy in helping you when I know whether it be tomorrow or 20 years down the road, you're going to pack up mm-hmm. and you're going to go home because the will's not going to be there. The
politics is not going to be there. And you don't believe there's going to be a change in your country to give you safe passage. You're just going to go back to meet the old new boss, same as the old boss.
That's exactly right. And if you look, the Taliban that was in control before, it's the same players.
They're back. Yeah.
We just let them come back in, you know? Actually, I was just I took a trip. Recently, I had a meeting I had to go to, and on the flight, I watched a movie called The Covenant. Mm-hmm. Have you ever seen that?
It's
a Guy Ritchie
yes.
movie. It's about an interpreter.
Yep.
And at the very end of the movie—
Not a translator, an interpreter.
That's right,
that's
an interpreter. It is important. But at the end of that movie, they discuss how many people that we left behind yep. in Afghanistan, and I know some of them.
Yeah.
And it's, how can you buy in? So if I'm in Qatar— and I'm the leadership in Qatar, why am I going to fully buy into helping the United States when I know that eventually we're just going to screw them over?
But we know that that's going to happen, so I hate that we partner with them too. So, we could talk an hour. I mean, people that you and I know in common that did some uncommon things to get their interpreters out.
That's
people right here at home.
That's right. That's right.
Spent a lot of their own money.
That's right.
Using systems to get those people out, and still we left so many. All right, and just off on a tangent, because I want to talk about a couple things with you today before we wrap up. Number one, looking at the news story, these dirtbags, suspects in the murder of Kaylee Knight, 9-year-old girl, being held using Anaya's Law. You were the winner of last year's Alabamian of the Year for Anaya's Law, and now what's it like seeing it being used?
Well, I'll tell you what, Sean, I've told a few people. I was humbled by that last year, too. I was to be named the 106.5
Alabama of the year.
That's a big honor. I really appreciate everyone
supporting
me on that. And we pass bills. I pass bills, and I sponsor bills, pass bills, and you don't really usually see them. You know, you're changing wording in something
right.
from they to them, or whatever. But that's the one piece of legislation in particular that. Anaya's Law that, if I left politics tomorrow, it would all be worth it for the fact of that law saves lives.
Yeah.
Plain and simple. And it's, what it does, it allows us to keep for the first time, because before the way Alabama law was, unless you were charged with a capital crime, mm-hmm. unless you were charged with capital murder, they couldn't hold you without bond.
Even though there's the trajectory of this over time, where so many of those people went right back out and committed some other crime.
Oh, and that's where this came out of, was Mobile law enforcement talking to me and saying, we've got to do something to keep these guys behind bars, because we know that they're predisposed, they're going to get out and they're going to commit another crime. And we had to do something. And so, we passed this piece of legislation. The voters got over 1 million votes at the ballot box, led it in 2022. It was a top vote getter. And I get emails and calls from all over the state on a regular basis. I speak with Angela Harris, that's Anaya Blanchard's mother, mm-hmm. on a regular basis. And we talk about different stories and things that happen around the state. And it's impacted so many people mm-hmm. that I think it has saved lives, because it's kept people behind bars pending trial that don't need to be out. We know they're going to get – if they get out, they're going to commit another heinous crime against somebody in this state. And so this has allowed us the opportunity to keep those people behind bars.
Yeah, it's being used right now. So it's in the news when y'all hear that. That's that piece of legislation. looking at session coming up here in 2024. Speaking of legislation, you might have heard me ranting a bit about the fact that, hey, I think this gambling thing really is going to come back up since the state is cracking down on illegal gambling. That's my tell out there. So what are y'all hearing? What are you expecting to see come session?
We're going to see something. It's there's legislation.
Are we like the Del Marsh thing from before?
Nah.
No?
Yeah, I think it's been, you know, what was the last time we voted? Singleman was in office, mm-hmm. So you've had all that time to learn from the past, and, you know, hopefully we have legislation that...
But that was a lottery vote back then.
No, nah, it'll be a comprehensive.
You know what I'm saying? Back in the Singleman days, there's a lottery vote.
Right.
Now there's... Correct me if I'm wrong, but as much as I keep my ear to Montgomery, at least 2 years ago, there's no chance of getting a standalone lottery bill.
Well, I think that's always been one of the problems is you fall into three categories. You've got people that don't want any type of gaming, and then you have people that just want a lottery, then you have people that they want everything. Mm-hmm. And I think that the stars align better on a bill that brings everything together. And
those stars that are in alignment are those interests in gaming, right? Those people that have a dog in the hunt.
Well, not necessarily. I think this is what I see. This is what I would like to see in a piece of legislation. One, I think you open up the – I would like to see us open up the bidding process to anyone, everyone.
No.
Yeah.
Like a free market system.
It's called free markets. It's called capitalism.
Wait a second. Wait, just hold on, Representative. Hold on. You're saying where – have a constitutional amendment that changes the law, or the Constitution of Alabama, and then private entities can pool capital and risk their capital in the free market to get a license and then be able to still return revenue to the state?
It is shocking, I know, in the world we live in.
I wish I had some pearls to clutch.
Our young people are leaning towards socialism to have a capitalist idea. But yes, free market economics works. It's fair. It's free.
Yeah, but it seems like the cabal is aligned against that ever happening in Montgomery.
Well, I think this is the time, and I think one of the things you're seeing, you talked about enforcement earlier.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there's been an effort for people to go and look at their districts and look at illegal gaming activity and that sort of thing. And what's been uncovered essentially is that, I mean, people that say we don't have gaming are fooling themselves.
Sure.
It's going on in every county in this state.
Mm-hmm.
We're just not, it's not being cracked down. It's not being enforced. And you have some counties. Jefferson County is probably leading the state in the number of illegal bingo halls.
Did they shut down like 18 at one point or something like that?
And then 18 just popped right back up.
Yeah.
There's no teeth. You know, if you put in a legal slot machine and behind the curtain in your small business, just within a few hours, you've made your money back. But one of the things that we've seen on that, too, in looking at what's happening across the state is there's an organized crime element that controls that. If you look at those machines, when they seize those machines and the way the Alabama law is written, if I come into your business and I seize an illegal bingo machine, I have to hold that machine. So the law enforcement, where are you going to store all those bingo machines?
Remember all the videos of the storage unit the state has?
Yes, yes, exactly.
Yeah.
So, you know, I'm a small town sheriff or a small county sheriff. Where am I going to have the room to hide all these illegal bingo machines? And but it also has a provision in there that you can essentially return them. So what happens is they just get refurbished, sent off to another place in the state of Alabama. So if you look at where they're coming out of and who controls them, there's some organized crime elements in the state that are controlling gambling. And you know, one of the things that we've got to look at is enforcing that. And I think that's one of the things that if we – the legislation, any legislation we have, it's going to have to bring an element of centralizing. That's one thing that I think if you do legalize gaming is it cleans all that up because it makes that illegal and has an enforcement piece to it that would be centralized in a gaming commission that would have enforcement powers through ALEA that would go out and crack down on these.
But don't they already have – I mean, different, but don't we already have –
Well, one of the
system where the state could, ALEA could do this now, couldn't they?
But one of the problems is the system that we have now, it's left up to the county sheriffs. And if you look at...
What about supremacy of the state? It seems like if you want to change the minimum wage in a municipality, the state has shut people down, so...
Well, but one of the... It's it's multiple issues on that. One, if the enforcement is left up to the local sheriff, and I'm not saying anything about our sheriffs here, of course. I'm talking about more of the smaller counties, the more rural counties in particular. Those are elected offices, and they're interconnected in the county, and some of those counties, the law enforcement side has interest in some of the gaming through relatives, that sort of thing, and so there's not the will or the desire to clean up illegal gaming in the state of Alabama. And on the state side, you know, it's if you look, there's been a messy history of that. We had another attorney general that tried that on his own, went out, and it was a mess. It was a disaster. So I think that what we've got to do, part of any type of legislation we bring has got to have a strong enforcement piece that centralizes the enforcement side through ALEA, and that's a way to clean it up.
All right, coming right back with District 105 Representative Chip Brown right here on Midday Mobile.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
Welcome back, Midday Mobile, FM Talk 106.5. Glad to have you here on this Monday. And a conversation here with District 105 Representative Chip Brown, talking upcoming session. And yeah, I mean, obviously, there's other things to talk about, but right now, gaming. It wasn't there last year, but 2 years ago, it's coming back. Mitel was the crackdown on the illegal gaming. But this idea, I've been told that this can't happen unless you bring, because... And I respect people who would vote against gaming because it's their true belief or whatever, and they're going to say no. But that affects a lot in the Republican ranks. So Republicans that have been behind, like Del Marsh's bill, need Democrats to come along. Those Democrats have interest in the legacy dog track facilities. So they want their piece of the pie to get the vote in. So you can't do this thing without serving all these masters. My worry is you serve them, but it gives a triopoly or quadopoly in the state. Nobody else can get in the business.
Well, that's the way it's always been written like that before. I mean, legislation.
Who wouldn't want that deal?
Yeah, exactly. So I think though what we're and like I said, the legislation. My understanding is still being worked on, but there will be legislation this time. I support a free market approach. I support open it up. Let's bid on that and let the best person come in and do it. But first and foremost, if you really look at what we're considering, it's letting the people vote on it. I mean, that's where we are.
Amendment.
Exactly. Because people have this idea that end of the day, we're voting for gaming. No, we're voting to create the best potential system that we could for the people of the state of Alabama. And that's, we're voting to let the people vote on that. We haven't had a gaming vote since Don Siegelman was governor. It's crazy.
Right. It's been 1993, was that?
It was late 90s. Okay, 99?
Okay. Yeah. But people have to realize, too, like you said, you have to have a CA. You have to constitutional amendment change. And then you have to have the supporting legislation. So if this happens and we allow this, then here's what it'll look like. Right, there's the two parts. I mean, we can't just have a CA to change it without having...
Well, the way you can do it one of two ways. You can have one piece of legislation and you put the CA in with that.
Okay.
That's problematic, though, because like Anaya's law was a constitutional amendment. But I had two separate pieces of legislation, because if you do two separate pieces of legislation, then it's easier to go back. Let's say there's some crime in 20 years that we wanted to add to that. Mm-hmm. Then you can go and add to that.
Without having to change the CA.
Right, exactly. Yeah. So most people, when you do a constitutional amendment, you do two pieces of legislation. You have what's called the enabling legislation, and then you have, which is the actual bill, and the language, and then you have a constitutional amendment, and that lays out what it'll say on the ballot.
But right now, your push for a free market situation, do you think you're going to get to see a bill and vote on a bill like that?
I do. Okay. I do. That's do. My thought. That's the discussion.
That's interesting.
That's the idea. I think that you've got to have, you would have three separate, you would have lottery
as its own bill.
As its own, well, inside more okay. than likely comprehensive bill.
Okay.
But it would create what the lottery would do, what okay. it where the payouts are,
for
that
the
sort
children.
Of thing. And then, but you need a separate lottery commission to oversee the lottery, and then you have a gaming commission that oversees the actual gaming, you know, table games, that mm-hmm. sort of thing at facilities. And then you have sports betting is right. the other component on that. So,
well, you know, and well, so sports betting for private capital, right?
Right.
Table games for private capital.
Right.
You want people to pass out in the aisles there in the house? I got one you can throw in. Why didn't Alabama change the narrative? And why don't we allow private capital to run lottery?
Well, that's, I support that, actually.
I mean, why does it have to be the job of the state, just like Aiden was asking about the liquor stores?
Well, if you look at lotteries that are the most successful, they're separate corporations that answer to the state, but they're not run by the state. And that allows them to the opportunity to be more innovative, to bring in different games. It allows them to be more responsive because, you know, you're not running a big bureaucracy. You're running a corporation. You're running a private state corporation. It's not a multinational corporation that's going to come in and run it. But it has its own board of directors that are appointed. It's a separate – that's the only way, in my opinion, to make it the most successful. The most successful states have done that.
There we go. Coming back and see me soon.
Yes, definitely.
Merry Christmas to you and yours.
Merry Christmas to you.
And I'll use this as a pivot here. Alabama of the Year from last year, Representative Chip Brown, voting for this year's 2023 Alabama of the Year going on our website, fmtalk1065.com. Coming back, Cam Marson, what's working?
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 1065.
At 1:35, FM Talk 1065, Midday Mobile. Glad to have you here on this Monday. I guess just a week out from Christmas, which is in about three more days, I'll start my Christmas shopping. Hey, speaking of people out shopping, if Santa's looking for a vehicle, or if you're looking for a vehicle for Santa, either way, talk to my buddy David McCrary at LCM Motor Cars. David, you're on the road right now. You just got back from on the way back from a delivery.
I am. I got a buddy over in Baldwin County. We'll call him Sweet Potato Pete. He just bought himself a new Lexus, and he traded in a little Cadillac he's got, and he was over at the house the other night and said something about trading, and I showed him a few pictures of this, that, and the other, and we did it all kind of sight unseen. It worked out nice, but we try to have our vehicles nice enough to where if we do something sight unseen like that, when we get there, there's no disappointments, and he was extremely happy with the vehicle. I'm driving his trade back now. I hadn't blown up, so everything seems to have gone all well.
Well, you know, and you've done this for me two times on finding vehicles like that. You know, and sometimes you got it on the lot. Sometimes it's like, yeah, that's kind of what I want, but I want this feature or that color. And then you go say, okay, Sean, here's a bunch of them that look like that. What do you think?
Yeah, and then sometimes, you know, like last week, you run into that one that you didn't know smelled like smoke, and you're glad we went and put our hands on it, you know, because we'd have bought that vehicle and had it back, and the customer would have been real upset. And I've been stuck with the car, honestly, because you can't make the customer keep it.
That's right.
So it's all about working together and trying to make sure that we do our due diligence for our customers, make sure they have a nice vehicle.
All right. Well,
and,
people,
I think that's what we did with this guy across the bay.
Well, people are looking for somebody to trust like that, and you're the guy I trust on it. So tell people how to find you if they're looking for that next vehicle.
You can give us a call at 375-0068. That's our office number. Talk to any of the guys or myself. We're at Highway 90 and Plantation in Theodore. It's 1 mile south of exit 15A. Or go to the website, lcmmotorcars.com. lcmmotorcars.com, you can text me. You can put in requests. You can put in credit apps. Everything's secure. So get after us one way or the other.
Good stuff. David, we'll talk again soon.
Have a good day, Sean.
Hey, you too. David McCrary checking in from LCM Motor Cars. And I look over to my left and y'all's right, and hey, band. He's in studio during my show. It's my friend Cam Marston from What's Working. Hey, man.
Hey, Sean. Nice to see you back at work.
Yeah, I've been back. It's Monday.
Yeah.
Sunday, I'm usually off.
So. I sat in for you a couple of weeks ago.
You know, but you'll never let that go.
No.
You never let that go.
No.
And you said I was where?
Oh, you were several places. You were in a clothing optional resort down in Mexico.
And I was
you were
disappointed
at a mime
that I wasn't.
College out in France. You were learning how to be a mime. All these secret desires of yours manifested in that week that you were gone.
Because I walked back in after you did that. And I'm looking at the text line, all that. They're like, hey, how was the resort? Like, yeah, thanks, Marston. Appreciate that, man.
You turn the microphone over to me, and there's a small price to pay.
Yeah,
first is... the listeners are going to get good content, and second is you're going to become the butt of all the good jokes.
That's good. That's fair. I'll take that.
Yeah.
I'll be able to take a little time off. I'll take that deal for sure. Let's talk. You walk in here, which, by the way, Merry Christmas to you.
And back to you. Thank you.
You walk in here with Christmas presents that are delicious.
Yes.
So
yes.
I like to eat my way through Christmas, and you've hooked me up here.
Oh, man. I consider if I come through the end of the Christmas holidays having gained only 10 pounds, it's essentially I lost weight. So I give myself 10 pounds.
Okay.
But I'm like you. I'm like the FM Talk 106.5 motive is we're giving local, my wife and me. And I've interviewed these guys a couple weeks ago. Their show will air tonight, and that's the two guys from Bayou Cora Farms. They were actually on the show while you were gone, and I absolutely fell in love with their story, which is one of the great things of being able to do what's working is to hear these stories. We don't get into P&Ls, and we don't get into balance sheets. We get the stories. And these guys, I'll tell you the very abbreviated form, which you can hear in greater detail either on the podcast or a Wednesday night at 7 on this station. They had 98 kernels of corn that they found in the back of their granddaddy's freezer in the back of the barn. They decided to plant them and see what happened. All but like four of them grew. And these are non-GMO heirloom quality corns, which apparently in the world out there means something.
Oh, it does.
I was not aware of the significance of this until, in fact, these guys came to my studio in my office, and my office neighbor learned what they had, and he was just over the moon, the fact that he could find non-GMO corn products. So they planted these 98 kernels, like 92 of them, 94 of them came up. Today, they're at the point seeking new acreage. They've grown so much from these 98 kernels to try to find new acreage to continue to supply the increased demand for their products out there. And that's one of the gifts I gave you that my wife and I have experimented
the
with
grits
is
here,
their grits.
Yeah, so I got this thing. I got the bag here, heirloom grits.
Yeah.
You know, Bayou Cora Farms out of Bon Secours. And by the way, they're also on the Locals Only Christmas list this year.
I saw that.
This is fantastic. This is showing the multicolored cobs of corn on here.
Yeah, we used to call it Indian corn when I was a child, which is probably going to get me in trouble for something. But that's what we used to call it as a child. And
but they could call it original corn since we got it from Native Americans. They had it first and then took it back to Europe and then messed with it and brought it back here.
It's hard to find, apparently.
Yeah.
There are rules about it. For example, you cannot grow this crop adjacent to other similar crops. There's got to be a minimum space between this heirloom corn product and any other corn product.
For cross-pollination worries.
Due to fears of cross-pollination. Mm-hmm. So it's not just like we grow out in the field and throw the seeds in the ground. There's a lot to it. And the consumer market out there, like I said, I didn't know, is really hungry for this, pun firmly intended, and they can't get their hands on it. So I'm a big fan of these two guys. I'm a big fan of their story. But also in that bag that I gave you here just a moment ago is Billy's Bacon. Here's another guy who's doing it locally, who's making...
He's been doing this a while, too.
And the demand has just started to surge for Billy. He's been discovered. I mean, he's been in the process. He's one of these 20-year overnight sensation guys.
Right.
And he's being discovered, and the demands are coming in from across the country to get their hands on his bacon, and it's really satisfying for me to see these local companies, some of which I know, some of which I've had on the show, find a niche, find a toehold, and begin to get the recognition that they deserve. It's absolutely wonderful to see a local kid done good, and that's why my wife and I, in our very modest, meager way, try to offer these things to our friends to say, hey, maybe you'll like these grits, and if you do, go get some more someday at the Publix or wherever you can find it.
Well, you had me at grits and bacon
for
my Christmas gift. You know, it's interesting, Cam, to think about how things, and you look at business at a local level, you also talk to people that are, you know, international, everywhere in between. But like on this food side, right, with these gifts, what was normal to our grandparents and how you acquired food then went through this arc where it was like all outsourced. And then it hit a peak. And I don't know was the driver was COVID or what it was, because there was already a movement for local VOR before that to some degree. But I think COVID hit and supply chain issues and all that. So people then revisited this, probably for getting supply, and then embraced the, oh, wow, this is something local. This is something close. This is something that doesn't have some big recall because it got messed up in a, you know, processing factory or system in Cincinnati.
Yeah.
And they fell in love with this stuff again. So I think we've made this arc and we come back to where our grandparents were on local acquisition of some of our food.
I remember hearing that most beer drunk prior to prohibition was all local. Every town had 3-4 breweries. And then after prohibition, the rules changed and it became a national product. And we're seeing that pendulum swing back a good bit too, with a number of the local breweries that continue to open, some having greater success than others. I'm a big Braided River fan. And with an emphasis becoming more local. And like you said in the previous hour, none of this Bayou Cora stuff is being prevented from going from the Panama Canal or through the Red Sea right now.
Correct.
We'd have to spend a lot of time, but we could walk to where they make this stuff versus it being halfway around the world.
They might have to transport it across the intercoastal waterway.
Yeah, exactly.
Down if you're down in South Baldwin, but
which they could blow up a raft and push it across if they had to. And I think there's an interest in that, and I think that's great. And not to lay a hammer on the big companies out there, but the small ones seem to have the heart, and I'm a big fan of that. Go team, go local people, go team.
Yeah.
So that's what we're trying to do, and that's what the show essentially tries to reveal is the stories behind a lot of these things. And they're not all local. As you know, the show is now well outside the footprint of the state of Alabama.
That's right.
So
congratulations.
Thank you. We're trying to continue to find those types of stories, but in different communities across the country. It's a little bit harder when you can bump into somebody locally and they'll tell you a story and you say, well, come on the show. Now we're looking for these stories across the country. It's a little bit more difficult, but I enjoy the challenge.
It's got your flavor to it, right?
Yeah.
Pun intended there. Think about this, like from at the end of one of your shows, and I get these takeaways, even if that business is nothing. I'm in the radio business, and there's something that's not even close, whoever you're talking, not even close to what I do. I get these takeaways. Or like when you condense it in the book, in the latest book, where I can get there and I can get you even summarized it for dummies like me. Here's the takeaways we got from that. And in business, these things are important. They don't do anything. Their widgets are completely different from mine, but I find myself hearing what challenges they had and how they figured out how to solve those challenges. I go, oh, that can apply to our business as well.
The takeaways that we try to generate on that show are applicable to all businesses. We try to make them applicable to all businesses. And as I'm interviewing the people, I try to think to myself, my listener is typically a person who can influence his or her business. Mm-hmm. And I don't want to make the takeaways of this show so narrow that anybody can't learn from it. In other words, I want a broad that anybody from any business is able to appreciate the lesson learned. We small networking group, and there's a guy who runs a high-end window door shutter company. And he says, I try to make this business in such a way that anybody can come in and understand it. You don't have to know about these specific things. I try to make it easily understandable that we can bring talent in here and then teach them the business versus people who know windows, shutters, and doors and then have to teach them the business. We want it broad. And that's kind of the attitude and the approach to the show. And that's what a lot of these people have in common is common sense business acumen that is applied to their specific product.
Right.
Grits.
Yeah. I mean,
bacon. I got a list here. Joey Mason with his product, which is just spectacular. I agree with you on that. There's so many of them, and I enjoy finding those stories.
Do this. You hang out with me for a second?
Sure.
And coming right back, Bort, you know him from print, from personal speaking engagements, and a now ever-growing radio show, What's Working? It's Cam Marston, our guest right here on Midday Mobile.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
All right, 149, FM Talk 106.5 and Midday Mobile. My guest, you know him, you love him. It's Cam Marston. What's Working? and local food. But this isn't just like going down the farmer's market here. This is kind of next level stuff. You talk about Billy's Bacon, or you talk about Bayou Cora Farms, Mason Hills, they're all stepping up to the next level.
Small batch, hands-on. Hands-on by the people who made it, right? Not by a assembly line somewhere. With a lot of focus and attention given to the product. You might find Billy's Bacon, for example, is going to be a little bit more expensive than others, but I have no problems paying that. It's better. It's and it's made by a guy who continues to stay involved locally. Yeah, I have no problems.
And it's, you know, it is important. We're not going to be able to get every staple food-wise locally, but when there's good choices, right, and these companies make great products, then people go, I'll do that again. They try it once and they'll go, yeah, I'll do that again.
And it feels good to support them. And I don't know exactly how that's measured, but I don't know anybody at Oscar Mayer who makes bacon.
No.
I don't know anybody at Bryant who makes bacon, but I know Billy. I know these guys, the Higginbotham brothers who make this corn. I know Joey, spent a lot of time with Joey Mason recently. And I don't know, man. It works for me to find somebody locally that's doing some good stuff, that's working their tail off to make it better and to make our community better, investing in locally, jobs, et cetera. It just feels right to me. It really does. And it doesn't mean I'm never going to eat a Bryant patch of bacon again, but it means if I have a choice, I'm going to choose something that has a little spirit locally to it.
There you go. Wednesday night,
7 p.m.
Of course, replays through the weekend.
And replays through the weekend. I think 11, what is it? 2 on Saturday and 7 on Sunday.
That's right.
And you'll meet the Higginbotham brothers this week, talking about their story on Bayou Cora Farms. It's really a remarkable story. Not to mention the quality of the product. The story in itself is fantastic. You'll enjoy this.
I can't wait. And thank you for my gifts. I appreciate it. Merry Christmas to you and yours.
Merry Christmas. Thank you. You too.
Coming right back. It's time for a checkup here on FM Talk 106.5.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
Hey, welcome back to Midday Mobile on FM Talk 106.5. And it's time for a checkup. AltaPoint's Chief Medical Officer, Dr. Sandra Parker, joins us again. Thanks for coming in.
Thank you for having me.
Hey, we're going to talk about SAD today, or that acronym, which means what?
Seasonal Affective Disorder.
Okay, this is that, because I've seen the stories about that. This time of year, we get less light and it affects human beings.
Yes.
And what's happening there? Like, what's the mechanism that causes the lack of light to make us feel depressed or sad?
Well, like most things in psychiatry and mental health, we never know exactly what it is that causes anything.
Dang it, I wanted a specific answer.
But I can tell you some of what we think. And one thing is that we think that decreased sunlight, for whatever reason, causes chemical and neurotransmitter changes in the brain that lead to depression. For some reason, it causes a decrease in serotonin that leads to depression. Another theory is that as the days are longer and darker, we increase the production of melatonin in the brain, and somehow increased melatonin leads to depression. And then another thing some people think is, of course, we need sunlight to make vitamin D, and when we have less sunlight, we're making less vitamin D, and that may lead to depression.
You know, as much as we think we human beings are well beyond, you know, we're beyond the early times of humans, we got computers, we put things on Mars and all that stuff, but it boils down to it, we're still connected to the natural world and what our bodies do. Like, the sunlight is a big cause of how we feel.
Absolutely. We know that people who live farther from the equator are more likely to suffer from seasonal affective disorder. So you might say, well, in the United States and in Mobile, do we have it? Certainly we do have it in Mobile even. And in the United States, it's more likely in Minnesota or another northern area of the United States.
But it can. So it's not just like Alaska or North Dakota or something like that. It could happen here.
It can happen in Mobile, yes. Because even in Mobile, we have less sunlight during the winter. And mostly this is a seasonal depression, as the name says, and it happens mostly in fall and winter, and mostly in January and February. Those are the most common times we see it. If you have seasonal affective disorder, it can actually cause you to be depressed about 40% of the year, and that's a significant amount of time to be depressed.
That's a whole bunch. Do the people that deal with this that y'all see, do they already have an issue with depression and this magnifies it, or are there people that, like, the rest of the year, they're good, but for that 40% of the time, they feel this way.
There's people that do not have any other symptoms of depression any other time of the year. Those are people who maybe the first year they get depressed in the winter, maybe they, you know they're depressed, but they don't really realize the significance of it. Maybe it happens to them the next year, and maybe they or family members say, hey, this happened to you last year. And then they come in and get the diagnosis of seasonal affective disorder.
So, I mean, somebody who just sees some pattern like that, that goes, you know, last January I felt this way. Maybe it's worth seeing what can be done.
Yes, absolutely. Because who wants to be depressed 40% of the year?
Yeah.
So we encourage people to come in and be seen. If you come in and we decide you don't need a medication, that's okay. You know, there's other things you can do that you might try first. You know, there's certain specialized lights that you can buy online. There are lights that screen out the UV, you know, the damaging rays. And so there's special lights like that. I tell people if they suffer from this, you know, move your desk closer to a window, be outside more. Of course, wear sunscreen. Mm-hmm. But do those kinds of things first if you want to and see if that helps. If those things don't help, certainly come in. You may need an antidepressant. The same things that work for traditional depression work for seasonal affective disorder. You know, antidepressants, psychotherapy such as cognitive behavior therapy. I tell people try some vitamin D and see if that helps. So those are all things that can help. You know, people don't need to suffer needlessly. Mm-hmm. You know, it's just like if you had a headache. Sure, your headache's going to go away probably within 24 hours, maybe sooner, but you could take a Tylenol and feel better sooner.
Right.
So certainly if you have depression, you want to come in and get treatment, because depression can, it can be serious. Even if it's a seasonal depression, it can lead you to have trouble functioning on your job. It can lead you to be socially withdrawn. It can cause you to have weight gain. People with seasonal affective disorder often crave carbs. They don't enjoy life that they used to. So we certainly encourage people to come in and get treatment.
All right, y'all, think about that. If you get this pattern each year, maybe it is seasonal affective disorder. Dr. Parker, people want to come in and see y'all. They call phone number first and set up an appointment. How do they do that?
They can go to altpoint.org and find our phone number on the altpoint.org website and see all our different locations. But we have a central number you can find at that website, and you call that, and we'll put you in the right place.
And Dr. Parker, thanks for coming in.
Thank you.